Welcome to Local Motion. For KVNF, I'm Kate Redmond. The Earth's magnetic north is moving about 37 miles a year. Why do we care? Why is this happening? What does it mean for migratory birds and navigation? I had the opportunity to speak with Greg Baker, who is an assistant professor of geology at Colorado Mesa University in Grand Junction in the Department of Physical and Environmental Sciences. I also spoke with Dr. Dave Noe of Paonia, who is a professional geologist and co-owner of Colorado Detours that offers farm, winery, and geology tours in western Colorado. First, here's Professor Baker. Thank you for talking with me today. We're going to go over the migration of the magnetic North Pole. But first, let's paint a picture for our listeners about how the magnetic poles are held in place. They're a result of Earth's molten iron core, which moves and flows as the Earth spins. These convection currents trigger electric currents and create a magnetic field around Earth, which protects it from solar wind and charged particles from the sun.
The Earth's magnetic field for us, for humans, no matter where we live, deflects cosmic radiation. And that cosmic radiation comes both from the sun and from elsewhere in our galaxy. So when you hear people talk about, scientists talking about neutron stars and pulsars and black holes giving off energy, there's a lot of energy and particles that come from not just our sun, but outside our solar system. And this magnetic field's kind of a shield. That radiation is stuff that causes cancer. An immediate link for every human is without the Earth's magnetic field, we have cancer problems. It's one of the main reasons for, I'm sure, listeners who are following scientific exploration and things that astronauts do, that's a huge worry. The further away they get from Earth, whether they're traveling to the moon or to Mars, Mars has a very weak magnetic field, almost non-existent. The further away they get from the Earth and its protective field, the more they're exposed to this radiation. So it's a big deal. But then, as you also mentioned, the Earth's magnetic field is key to navigation on Earth. When we get these, usually about every 11 years, the sun's magnetic field, which is a real monster compared to the Earth's magnetic field, every 11 years where we get this sunspot cycle, the sun's magnetic field actually flips north to south. And during that, plus other solar activity, those solar storms are all buffered by the Earth's magnetic field.
Let's talk about the movement, the migration of magnetic north. It's accelerating. Why is this happening?
Let me first just define, make sure we're all talking about the same thing. So I'd want to make sure your listeners know there are really three terms that people use when they're referring to, oftentimes when they're referring to the Earth's magnetic field. The first is what we call the geographic pole. That's the pole that the Earth spins around. Then there's something called the geomagnetic pole. The geomagnetic pole is the term we use for modeling the Earth's magnetic field as a single giant magnet. Now, that actually doesn't cover a lot of the smaller variations in the Earth's field, but it covers about 90% of the Earth's field in this model. That's the geomagnetic pole, and that sits around Hudson's Bay and, in fact, has not moved very much over the last several decades, in fact, even the last several centuries. What we're interested in is this third term, which is called the magnetic pole. And that is specifically defined where the Earth's magnetic field dives down and is completely vertical at the surface of the Earth. So when you're at the magnetic equator, which is not quite at the Earth's equator, right? We know magnetic north and geographic north aren't exactly the same. So around the equator, the Earth's magnetic field is actually parallel to the ground. But as you go to the North Pole or the South Pole, those magnetic field lines dive into the Earth, and where they are vertical, we call that the magnetic pole. So you're exactly right. What we have seen is the Earth's north and south magnetic pole over 200 years, which is as long as we've been measuring with instruments the Earth's magnetic field, getting a location for the magnetic north and magnetic south pole. They've moved relatively slowly, about 9 kilometers a year, which is roughly 6 miles per year. That's what they've done. In the last 30 years, the south magnetic pole, turns out, is still moving about that speed, but the north magnetic pole now has seemingly dipped into third gear. It's now moving 50 kilometers or about 30 miles per year. But interestingly, just the North Magnetic Pole.
And why is that happening?
What we know, as you mentioned in the introduction, is that with electromagnetic theory, there are all these famous electromagnetists, Coulomb, Ampere, Maxwell, Faraday. These folks generated this theory of electromagnetism that says if you move a magnet through a coil of wire, you generate an electrical field, right? That's how we do wind generation today, hydro generation. And in fact, a coal-fired power plant is just heating water to spin a turbine that spins a magnet within wire and makes electricity. Well, interestingly, the opposite also happens. It turns out that if you were to have a magnet within a coil of wire and you forced an electrical current through that coil of wire, it would generate a modified magnetic field. The coil of wire, in this case, is the rock of the Earth, the material of the Earth. Why we think these poles are moving, our best hypothesis is because we are shifting bodies of material that are slightly more or slightly less electrically conductive, and we're shifting them around in the subsurface of the Earth. So in other words, we're rattling this coil of wire. But again, I want to highlight to your listeners, this fast motion of the North Magnetic Pole right now is really fascinating, but compared to the phenomenon that we see on the scale of the entire Earth, it's not a major change.
Over the last two decades, the position of North Magnetic Pole has been largely determined by two large-scale lobes of negative magnetic flux on the core mantle under Canada and Siberia. When we say large scale, what do we mean?
The radius of the Earth, if we wanted to drill all the way down to the center of the Earth, is, we could say, 6,000 kilometers to drill a hole down to the center of the Earth. Interestingly, the deepest borehole we've ever drilled is a little bit over 30. We've gone 30-some kilometers. The Earth is 6,000. So the first thing is, we have to find other ways of knowing what's under there. And the way in which we usually do that is use earthquake waves. Just like if you're trying to find a tumor, or we use a sonogram, we put sound waves through, and that way we don't have to do anything invasive. We don't want to get in there so we can make a map. What we do now as geologists is we use earthquake waves. Fortunately, now we've got listening devices all over the Earth, and we can make a map of what's down there. The Earth being about 6,000 kilometers to get to the middle of it, the core mantle boundary is about two-thirds the way down. You're still talking incredibly deep. Here we are in Western Colorado. If you wanted to hop in your car and drive to the core mantle boundary, you'd probably be hopping in your car and driving to Iceland. These bodies that we think are moving, probably the scientists are talking about them as isolated bodies, but they're really probably diffuse. It's more kind of like when you first put a drop of ink in some water. There's no sharp boundary to it, but certainly there's a darker area and a lighter area. But these things are the size of states or countries. Most of the solid part of the Earth, that includes the inner core, which is solid, the mantle, which is solid, and the crust on the surface, which is solid. All of those three parts are solid. The outer core is the only real liquid part of the Earth. Those solid parts, we now know, move about the rate at which your fingernails grow. Somewhere between 1 and 2 inches per year, they move around. But that liquid outer core, because it's liquid, can move a lot faster than these slow solids. But again, I want to highlight to your listeners, this fast motion of the North Magnetic Pole right now is really fascinating, but compared to the phenomenon that we see on the scale of the entire Earth, it's not a major change. It's fascinating, interesting, does have a lot of implications, but isn't some sort of Hollywood catastrophe movie in the waiting. The downside is, although it has some variability, there's a lot of uniformity in the liquid in the outer core. Because it's relatively uniform, it's hard to make a map of it. It's mostly iron and nickel. Imaging of those bodies has only been possible in the last 5 or 10 years. So if you were to ask me, where were these lower electrical conductivity bodies at the core mantle boundary 20 years ago, we couldn't tell you. The hypothesis, because it's hard to test, is that these blobs are moving much faster than this rate your fingernails grow, 1 to 2 centimeters a year. And they may be moving 10 or 100 or 1,000 times that fast. The way in which we come up with that by building computer simulations, modeling today's changes that we see, this 50 kilometer per year shift in the North Magnetic Pole, can we get that with a computer model, say, without moving the South Magnetic Pole any faster? And the only way you can move the North Pole without moving the South Pole much is to have these things relatively near the surface of the core mantle boundary, still deep in the earth, things that might be about the size of Colorado, but maybe not necessarily very thick. If they get too thick, then when we move them, they start moving all the other magnetic stuff. Yeah, they shift the geomagnetic pole, the south magnetic pole, and everything gets messed up. So that theory that, or the hypothesis that you're suggesting of these blobs, these sort of lower electrical conductivity anomaly zones, are likely to be relatively large in extent, not particularly thick, we don't think, because if they get too thick again, then they would change everything else. And what we don't see is we don't see the geomagnetic field changing very much. The good news for us is the North Magnetic Pole is going for 50 kilometers a year towards Russia. And most of the Northern Lights, or the aurora, is based on the larger Earth field, which would be the geomagnetic pole.
One account that I read is that these two areas under Canada and under Siberia, this molten iron, are pulling against each other. What does that mean?
Right now, there are several ideas. The one where these things are in some ways considered pulling each other is part of it is being pulled, but part of it is that they're caught in the same convection current. In this case, they think that these two bodies are near a downward going convection current. We're really still trying to get rid of all the heat in the middle of the Earth from when the Earth formed 4.6 billion years ago. The Earth's still hot in there. And as that heat comes out, some places these convection currents are rising up and spreading apart. And then as they cool off, when they get to the mantle, they pull together and sink down. And the thought is these two magnetic bodies probably are rafted on two different parts of this core mantle boundary, and they're getting sort of pulled down the drain. In another 10, 50, 100 million years, they'll get pulled into the inner core, they'll get warmed up, and they'll move back up again.
When is the last time in the Earth's history magnetic north migrated to this degree?
The magnetic field that gets locked into rocks that we can measure today. So I could tell you what the Earth's magnetic field was like 500 million years ago. But that is dominantly the magnitude and direction of that geomagnetic field, that thing that is that bar magnet that's really the strongest, biggest part of the Earth's magnetic field. This little shifting that's going on with this magnetic north, we really don't have a good way of seeing that in the Earth's history in what we call archives, right? We can think of tree rings as archives of climate, and we can look at lava flows and measure isotopes for archives of timing of volcanic events and things like that. We don't have good archives on this magnetic pole shift. And so the best I can tell you is we don't even know whether normal is what's going on now. And for the last 200 years, it's been slow. If you were to ask me to guess, which scientists never really like to do, but I would guess that this acceleration is caused by these anomalous bodies. And it typically doesn't move slow or doesn't move this fast, mainly because we're seeing the South Magnetic Pole stay at the same old, slower velocity. It hasn't changed, really.
If your navigation system is pointing at the magnetic north of 5 years ago, how many degrees would you be off?
In the United States, the U.S. Geological Survey is the institution that measures the Earth's magnetic field. So the U.S. Geological Survey has permanent base stations all over the United States. Interestingly, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, the same group that everybody knows does the atmospheric weather, they actually have a branch called the Space Weather Prediction Center. And that Space Weather Prediction Center takes all of the data for the magnetic field from the U.S. Geological Survey. They look at solar data and atmospheric data from satellites that are tracking what's going on with the sun and other things, and that will make these models. In answer to your question, if somebody has an electronic compass or a phone that is connected to the internet, no matter how fast this thing moves, NOAA and the USGS and the other governing bodies in the world very readily push out where this position is. That gets incorporated into updates on your apps, and you will never notice a difference. Interestingly, however, though, they're having to do that more frequently because it's moving faster. If that thing's moving 50 kilometers and we're down here in Western Colorado, what you're probably seeing is per year a shift of maybe 1.5 to 2.5 degrees. And if the more years that that is off, that's going to make a big difference if you're trying to get to your old camping spot.
Finally, does this have anything to do with climate change?
The current theories, which is the best we can do right now, tend to suggest that most of the things that are happening on the surface of the Earth are coming from actions at the center that are moving outward. So it's energy from the core moving outward. It's the motion of the mantle moving the plates, which builds the mountains on the outward side. And there does not seem to be right now significant evidence of impacts on the deep interior of the Earth from things that are happening on the outside.
If you just tuned in, this is Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Kate Redmond, and I've been speaking with Professor Greg Baker on the migration of magnetic north, which in the past 20 years has accelerated from 10 miles a year to 37 miles a year. The magnetic North Pole has in fact crossed the prime meridian. To explore this migration, its causes, and the implications, I also spoke with local geologist Dr. Dave Noe. The Earth's outer core, which is made up of iron and nickel and is essentially liquid, is moving to the degree of 37 miles per year. We have measured this. Do we know what will happen in the future? Do we know if it's going to speed up or slow down or stop moving?
We don't know. There's a number of behaviors that these can have. The reversals can start locally, but it seems that most of them die down in Earth's history. If it keeps going and it spreads, then it can result in some flipping. But right now we know that we're overdue for one. It certainly hasn't happened in quite a while.
Is the history of previous major shifts of the Earth's magnetic north written as a record in the geology?
Yes, it's written throughout the world wherever there have been molten rocks that have crystallized. They crystallize and they magnetized with the Earth's field at that point. So we've got a record in different places all over the world. The best continuous book of it is the Mid-Atlantic Rift, where those reversals show up for the last 260 million years. And they are our main record of the continuity of these types of shifts.
Where is the North Atlantic Rift?
That's right in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. Europe and North America used to be right together. South America and Africa used to be right together. That ocean has been opening for this 250 million years. We see the record of it with the basalts that come up at the Mid-Atlantic Rift.
And who is studying that out in the middle of the Atlantic?
It was a part of a great deal of study back in the 1960s because it became one of the basics for plate tectonics. Before that, geologists just kind of thought that the continents floated around all over the world. But this really put in the mechanics of how it happens. New crust is formed whenever the rift opens up. And then there are other places called trenches, and that's where the continents are coming together. And we're losing crust, which becomes molten again down in the mantle.
So there's kind of a feedback loop between the Earth's outer core and the rocks that we can see and interact with. Does this molten magma movement have effects on geology here in the North Fork Valley, where geology is so dynamic?
What we're seeing is more of the plate tectonics type geology, where we've got molten rocks, but they're at the surface. When they're near the surface, they can erupt as lava flows. And that's what we see up on Grand Mesa. And we've had those types of eruptions since at least 4,000 years ago. That's our youngest one that we know around here of a volcano going off. What we see in the places like the North Fork Valley are movements of magma that are in the crust of the Earth. So that's relatively shallow. We see volcanic eruptions, and our latest volcanoes were only about 4,000 years ago. So pretty recently, we've seen that type of movement. Today, we don't see any of that. The type of movements that we're talking about with the core, however, and the geomagnetic field are much, much deeper than the types of things that we see right at the surface of the ground.
So is there some kind of feedback loop between the molten outer core and the geology closer to the surface?
The movement that we see there is really what's responsible for plate tectonics. Cells of molten material that are moving down in the core of the Earth itself are kind of the rollers that the continents are gliding on. So the continents and the crust are a little bit harder and more brittle. They kind of skate along on top of all this liquid, very hot iron down below.
Professor Baker talked about how the two large bodies of molten iron under Canada and under Siberia, which are largely responsible for the movement of magnetic north, are caught in a downward convection movement, which is sharply affecting where they drift and how they drift. Can you talk about that?
In flow, things tend to sink when they get cool, and they tend to rise when they get hot. And so in these circulation cells, some liquid that is cool will end up going down, and then it'll go to a warmer place, and it'll circulate, and then it'll come back up. There are cells of these molten materials down beneath the Earth, and it's all part of a circulation, much like our weather patterns with warmer and colder air.
I wanted to ask you if this migration of magnetic north has anything to do with global warming?
We've seen these types of magnetic reversals and migrations happen in all sorts of geologic periods. It happened when the Earth was colder. It happened when the Earth was warmer. So I don't think that there's a very strong correlation there.
Those two large bodies of molten iron, are there attending pools of material like that in other parts of the Earth?
I would think so, and I don't know the strength or to what degree, but certainly there are some that are causing more effect on the Earth's magnetic field than others, and those are called disturbances. It would seem that those two areas in Canada and over in Siberia are disturbances in the main flow field, and so they're having some effect right now.
And would this describe why magnetic north is moving, but the magnetic south is not?
Yeah, if it's nearby, those are local disturbances. And in the reading that I've done, most of those disturbances are described as dying down. But it also says that a disturbance can start a reversal process as well. So if the disturbance spreads and gets larger and larger, then it could actually have that result of flipping the polarity of the Earth.
And what would happen if the polarity of the Earth flipped?
For one thing, we'd need to rename South and North Dakota. But other than that, it's interesting because there are geologic records where you can look at the rocks and you can look at the fossils during these time periods that the reversals happened. The main thing that's come up, I read in a paper by NASA that summarized it, is that there really aren't any changes to things like plant or animal life through those reversals, or glacier activities, or the amount and types of oxygen isotopes. There doesn't seem to be any change in the tilt of the Earth's rotational axis through all of this. So a lot of things on Earth maintain the same. We just get the shift in the polarity. And as you know, Kate, there are animals that depend on polarity for things like migrations. You know, looking at the fossil record, maybe they figure it out after a while. I don't know what it really means. I know that dogs are oriented if they run by themselves. There was a study over in England about their toilet habits, and they're very much aware of the magnetic poles. But whether it's north or south, a shift of the polarities doesn't really shift the direction. It just shifts the polar end of it.
Can you talk more about how migratory birds and turtles that rely on magnetic north for orientation, how they're being affected?
When you look at birds like cranes, they've been around for 35 million years, and they're very famous migrators. That's been across different polarity shifts through time. The ability of a bird to distinguish the poles is pretty strong. Whether there are other factors with it, like which way the cold or warm weather is coming from, that influences whether they fly one way or another, it may not just be the magnetic pole that's helping them along.
I understand that the USGS and NOAA, who are responsible for updating the position of magnetic north, are having to update their maps more frequently because it's shifting 37 miles more or less every year.
That's right, and it's moved over 600 miles since the North Pole was supposedly located in one place, and now we found out that it's moving. We even see it in the geologic profession today with geological mapping. I was in the North Fork a decade ago doing my mapping for the state of Colorado, and we could not use the topo maps as they had been printed out in the 60s and 70s and 80s because that shift had been already affecting the polarity or where the magnetic field was. We had to have a special dial on our compasses that would make a correction of about half to three quarters of a degree of where we were looking. Now, if you're walking 100 feet, that doesn't make much difference, but if you're trying to project something over a series of miles, you could actually be quite a ways off.
How many degrees do you think magnetic north is off now on your compass as related to the 60s?
It depends on where you are. So in the North Fork area, it's probably almost a degree different than what it was before. It can make a big, big difference. The most interesting thing that's caught my mind is the article that I read in Frontiers of Zoology that was talking about the study of dog poops in England. And just what you have to do, you have to let the dog run free so they can't be on a leash or anything like that. But they observe almost 7,000 individual episodes in 70 different dogs, 35 different breeds over 2 years, and they just found out that it was always on a north-south axis. Now, I've been watching Jesse as we walk through town because I'm a good scientist, right? And all of a sudden, I've become, you know, even more interested in what he's doing along the way. And by gosh, even in Paonia, Colorado, and even on a leash, he is mostly settling in a north-south orientation, mostly facing to the south. By the way, the last reversal that we had was 780,000 years ago. That's not a great deal of time in Earth's history, but it's longer than the average amount of time that the reversals take. But some of the reversals can be exceedingly short. Some of them can be extremely long periods of time as well. It's an irregular process, unlike the sun that has a magnetic reversal every 11 years.
You've been listening to Local Motion. My guests today were Greg Baker, professor of geology at Colorado Mesa University, and Dr. Dave Noe, professional geologist in the North Fork Valley, speaking on the migration of the magnetic North Pole. I'm Kate Redmond for KVNF. Thank you for tuning in.